Hello and welcome to Pets Plus Us, a weekly program of information and stories about the companions in our lives, our pets. I'm Mary DeFranco, your host for Pets Plus Us. Coming up this half hour, are you prepared to save your pet during a disaster? September is National Preparedness Month, and the ASPCA has information and resources to help you plan ahead to save your pets as well as yourself in a disaster or an unexpected situation. So we will start with a letter from the president and CEO of the ASPCA, Matt Berkshatter. When a natural disaster ravages a community, the human impact is nearly unfathomable. People lose their homes, their communities, and their lives. But there are other victims as well. Animals endangered by both the disaster and a lack of emergency planning leading up to it. Panicked and in a rush to evacuate their homes, many pet owners are forced to choose between their pets' lives and their own. Polls have shown that too many owners don't have disaster plans in place, haven't microchipped their pets, and don't know what they would do with their pets in an evacuation. This is why September is National Preparedness Month, a reminder that while disasters cannot always be foreseen, advanced measures can be taken to save lives. Last month alone, hundreds of animals were displaced by wildfires in Northern California and flooding in southern Louisiana. Following the Louisiana floods, over 1,500 animals were evacuated to the same spot where nearly 7,500 animals were sheltered 11 years ago following Hurricane Katrina. In each of these cases, our Field Investigations and Response Team, or FIR, F-I-R, responded to assist local efforts to find and rescue pets in distress. Collaborating with our partners, we were able to reunite many lost animals with their families. But the task would have been much easier and more effective if owners had learned and taken a few precautionary measures. At the top of this list is having an emergency plan in place that ensures you won't have to leave your pets behind, and making sure your pets have ID collars and updated microchips. Both are important to ensure that your pet's safety, and getting your pet microchipped is a painless and relatively inexpensive procedure. Crucial recommendations for your emergency plan are: first, make arrangements with friends and family who can take your pet during an emergency. Talk to your local veterinarian or animal shelter to identify the location of nearby emergency shelters and pet-friendly hotels. Prepare a pet emergency kit that includes food, water, medication, feeding dishes, water bowls, pet carriers, toys, recent photos of your pet, and important medical records. And place rescue alert stickers on your windows to let rescuers know pets are inside. Remember, any home unsafe for people is also unsafe for your pets. To help, we recently launched an ASPCA mobile app with information and resources for owners before, during, and after an emergency. It works without an internet connection, includes lost pet tools and tips, and allows pet owners to store microchip information and medical records necessary for boarding pets at evacuation shelters. The tragic consequences of inaction are clear. During Hurricane Katrina, approximately 10,000 animals were evacuated, but less than half were ultimately reunited with their families. This disaster was a catalyst in elevating people's understandings of the dangers posed to pets in natural disasters and the importance of including animals in community emergency response plans. The new thinking led to the establishment of NARSC, N-A-R-S-C, the National Animal Rescue and Sheltering Coalition, in 2006. That same year saw passage of the Pets Evacuation and Transportation Standards, or PETS Act, which is designed to ensure state and local emergency preparedness operations address the needs of household pets and service animals following major disasters or emergencies. Local and national welfare groups have stepped up to this challenge, but individual owners need to do their part to keep their pets and themselves safe. There's no such thing as preparing too early when you consider the potentially devastating costs of acting too late. So please commit to your pet's safety as you would your own. Also from the ASPCA, the ASPCA mobile app helps pet parent find a lost cat. Heather Foster had just paid a pizza delivery man and closed her front door when she realized her cat, Bruce Lee, was missing. Every time the doorbell rings, Bruce comes to see who it is, explains Heather. He's a lot of cat and very social, so I noticed pretty quickly that he was gone. Figuring Bruce, named after the martial artist Bruce Lee because he can jump very high, must have slipped out the front door, Heather checked a nearby flower bed where she had found him once before. He wasn't there, so she scoured the neighborhood. Still no Bruce. Heather went online and soon came across the ASPCA's mobile app. She downloaded it to receive step-by-step instructions from the app's missing pet kit and used it to list her lost pet's circumstances. I literally went down the checklist to make sure I had covered all the bases, she recalls. With the help of the app, Heather created a flyer that she posted around her neighborhood. She borrowed a friend's wildlife trap. She set a webcam in her backyard. She also kept her garage door open and set out enticing food. Heather, a retail sales manager who lives in Moore, Oklahoma, the heart of Tornado Alley, has lived through many a tornado and understands the importance of disaster preparation. Her house includes a shelter under the garage with space and provisions for her and her pets, which include another cat named Ellie and a rescued beagle mix named Pearl. All of her pets have collars and ID tags and are microchipped. I take all the precautions I can and always watch the weather, Heather says. But a week later, Bruce had not reappeared. Unswayed, Heather continued to change the food in the garage, switching from tuna to wet cat food, the smellier the better, along with a blanket from the house and Bruce's litter box. Indoor cats can easily get disoriented if they end up outdoors, Heather explains, so it's helpful to put something outside that belongs to them or smells like them. And what could be more personal than a litter box? On the ninth day after his disappearance, at 4:30 in the morning, Bruce found his way to Heather's garage and the smelly food, announcing his arrival with a loud meow. To people who have lost or not yet lost their pets, Heather offers the tips she found on the ASPCA mobile app and encourages them not to give up. Don't be afraid to ask for help from strangers and don't ever think you'll be an imposition, says Heather, who knocked on doors in her immediate and surrounding neighborhoods. Pets can really bring people together. I needed support. Most people admitted they'd be just as distraught if their own pets went missing. There's no such thing as a timeline, Heather adds. Your pet is somewhere. September is Disaster Preparedness Month, and the ASPCA wants to ensure that all pet parents are ready to take action at a moment's notice. Download the ASPCA mobile app today for vital tips, information, and step-by-step guides to help protect you and your pet in the event of an emergency. And you can find that mobile app at the ASPCA.org website. In science, the emotional lives of animals. Anyone who knows me or even knows much about me knows that I love animals and will talk endlessly about my cats and the close bond I share with them. I talk to my cats, and they really do talk back and converse with me in audible, albeit not necessarily verbal, means of communication. Sometimes they even argue with me, and sometimes they win. Like humans, they use nonverbal cues, certain behaviors, and other sources of energy and influence to get their point across. They are my companions. We share our lives, and we understand and respect each other's feelings and emotions. If I am sad or upset, they will come and sit next to me as if they're standing guard, as if to say, we can't really do anything, but we're here for you just the same. When there's a thunderstorm, my cat Daisy is absolutely terrified, almost unconsolably. Perhaps being a former stray, she understands firsthand the real physical dangers of a thunderstorm to a small animal that cannot find adequate shelter. Daisy loves the sound of her name and is clearly in heaven in her head when she hears me speak her name over and over again as she rolls around and purrs with joy. I could go on forever, but we only have half an hour, so I'll get to the point. I recently came across the book The Emotional Lives of Animals by Mark Beckoff, published in 2007. The author talks about how we have come to understand, even scientifically, over time, that all animals are emotional beings, just as human animals are. I would like to read you just the preface of his book, which I hope you will enjoy. So here's the preface written by author Mark Beckoff in the book The Emotional Lives of Animals. He writes, as a scientist who's studied animal passions and beastly virtues for more than 30 years, I consider myself very fortunate. I love what I do. I love learning about animals, and I love sharing with others what my colleagues and I discover. Whenever I observe or work with animals, I get to contribute to science and develop social relationships at the same time, and to me, there's no conflict between those two activities. Before I begin, however, I'd like to address an important matter of terminology. In discussions of animal emotions, we sometimes forget that humans are also animals. However, it's cumbersome to use the phrase non-human animals to refer to beings we typically call animals. And so in this book, I use the word animals to mean non-human animals, realizing, of course, that we're all humans and hopeful that this linguistic shorthand won't perpetuate any forgetfulness. The field of animal emotions, which is a specific area of focus within the larger scientific discipline of cognitive ethology or the study of animal minds, has changed a great deal in the past 30 years. When I first began my studies, researchers were almost all skeptics who spent their time wondering if dogs, cats, chimpanzees, and other animals felt anything. Since feelings don't fit under a microscope, these scientists usually didn't find any, and as I like to say, I'm glad I wasn't their dog. But thankfully, there are fewer and fewer skeptics today, and while debates over whether animals have emotions still occur, the question of real importance is becoming why animal emotions have evolved the way they have. In fact, the paradigm is shifting to such an extent that the burden of proof now falls more often on those who still argue that animals don't experience emotions. My colleagues and I no longer have to put tentative quotes around such words as happy or sad when we write about an animal's inner life. If our dog Fido is observed to be angry or frightened, we can say so with the same certainty with which we discuss human emotions. Scientific journals and popular press regularly publish stories and reports on joy in rats and grief in elephants, and no one blinks. It's bad biology to argue against the existence of animal emotions. Scientific research in evolutionary biology, cognitive ethology, and social neuroscience supports the view that numerous and diverse animals have rich and deep emotional lives. Emotions have evolved as adaptations in numerous species, and they serve as a social glue to bond animals with one another. Emotions can also catalyze and regulate a wide variety of social encounters among friends, lovers, and competitors, and they permit animals to protect themselves adaptively and flexibly using various behavior patterns in a wide variety of venues. Charles Darwin's well-accepted ideas about evolutionary continuity that differences among species are differences in degree rather than kind, argue strongly for the presence of animal emotions, empathy, and moral behavior. In practice, continuity allows us to connect the evolutionary dots among different species to highlight similarities in evolved traits, including individual feelings and passions. What we have since learned about animal emotions and empathy fits well with what we know about the lifestyles of different species, how complex their social interactions and social networks are. Emotions, empathy, and knowing right from wrong are keys to survival, without which animals, both human and non-human, would perish. That's how important they are. And there are always surprises. Just when we think we've seen it all, new scientific data and stories appear that force us to rethink what we know and to revise our stereotypes. For example, just after receiving the galley proofs of this book, I came across a story in the December 2, 2006 issue of New Scientist magazine about emotions in whales. It turns out that humpback whales, fin whales, killer whales, and sperm whales possess spindle cells in the same areas of their brains as spindle cells in human brains. This brain region is linked with social organization, empathy, intuition about the feelings of others, as well as rapid gut reactions. Spindle cells, once thought to be unique to humans and other great apes, are believed to be important in processing emotions. And whales actually have more of them than humans do. All mammals, including humans, share neuroanatomical structures and neurochemical pathways that are important for feelings, but do all animals feel the same things? Research has shown that mice are empathic rodents, but it turns out that they're fun-loving as well. We also will hear stories of pleasure-seeking iguanas, a horse with a sense of humor, amorous whales, elephants who suffer from psychological flashbacks and post-traumatic stress disorder, a grieving otter, a bereaved donkey, pissed-off baboons, sentient fish, and a sighted dog who served as a seeing-eye dog for his canine buddy. While we might expect to find close, enduring, and endearing emotional relationships forming between members of the same species, improbable relationships often occur between animals of wildly different species, even between animals who are normally predator and prey. Such is the case with Ao-chan, a rat snake, who befriended a dwarf hamster named Gohan at Tokyo's Mutsugoro Okuku Zoo. If a snake and a hamster can become friends, then why not humans and other animals? Of course, they do all the time, but it's not just human emotions at play in these relationships. The emotions of animals attract us and bond us as well. During a series of lectures I gave at the Assistance Dog Institute at Santa Rosa, California in August 2006, I was able to observe the interactions between people with a wide range of disabilities and the dogs who were their lifelines. As I watched the nuanced, nitty-gritty details of communication that occurred through voice and movements, each person and his or her dog displayed a strong reciprocal social bond that was clearly based on mutual respect and feeling. Both beings, human and canine, shared an enduring emotional attachment that went far beyond mere training. I often begin my lectures with the question, is there anyone in this audience who thinks that dogs don't have feelings, that they don't experience joy and sadness? I've never had an enthusiastic response to this question, even in scientific gatherings, though on occasion a hand or two goes up slowly, usually halfway, as the person glances around to see if anyone is watching. But if I ask how many of you believe that dogs have feelings, then almost every hand waves wildly and people smile and nod in vigorous agreement. To live with a dog is to know firsthand that animals have feelings. It's a no-brainer. We map their feelings by observing their behavior, guided by the analogy of our own emotional templates, and we do it very reliably. And today, I'm happy to say even the majority of scientists agree with what seems like common sense to everyone else. Recognizing that animals have emotions is important because animal feelings matter. Animals are sentient beings who experience the ups and downs of daily life, and we must respect this when we interact with them. Animals are not only the companions we live with, care for, and love, they are also the billions of other domesticated animals who live on farms and in slaughterhouses and provide us with food and clothing. And wild animals are continually faced with trying to share our ever-crowded world. Our relationship with other animals is a complex, ambiguous, challenging, and frustrating affair, and we must continually reassess how we should interact with our non-human kin. Part of this reassessment involves asking difficult questions and making sure our actions match our understandings and beliefs. Thus, I often ask researchers who conduct invasive work with animals or people who work on factory farms, "Would you do that to your dog?" Some are startled by this question, but it's a very important one to ask. If we wouldn't do something to our companion animals that we do daily to mice, rats, monkeys, pigs, cows, elephants, chimpanzees, or even non-companion cats and dogs, we need to ask ourselves why. Humans have enormous power to affect the world any way we choose. Daily, we silence sentience in innumerable animals. However, we also know that we're not the only sentient creatures with feelings, and with this knowledge comes the enormous responsibility and obligation to treat other beings with respect and appreciation and compassion and love. There's no doubt whatsoever that when it comes to what we can and cannot do to other animals, it's their emotions that should inform our discussions and our actions on their behalf, and we can always do more for them. Emotions are the gifts of our ancestors. We have them, and so do other animals. We must never forget this. And that was from The Emotional Lives of Animals, written by Mark Beckoff. We all like to hear happy endings about animals that are in need of a good home. The ASPCA tells us about senior FIV positive cat that overcame the odds. Patty's Happy Tale. This is a tale about an old cat who had a long life before it found its forever home. It wasn't until the age of 9 that Patty found the perfect home. Perhaps it has something to do with his 9 lives, or maybe it was just the timing. Whatever the case, there is one thing for certain. This gentle, reserved cat has finally found the home of his dreams. Patty was brought into the ASPCA as a stray in 2010. Found roaming the streets of Manhattan, New York City, Patty was ill and in need of medical assistance. Shortly after he was brought in, it was discovered that Patty tested positive for feline immunodeficiency virus, or FIV, which weakens a cat's immune system and makes them susceptible to other infections. Although FIV can be dangerous and harmful to the cat's health if not properly treated, it is completely manageable when the cat is given proper care. Luckily for Patty, the team at the ASPCA Animal Hospital began treating him right away, ensuring him a more comfortable and bright future than he had before. After his stay at the hospital, we were thrilled to see Patty found a home. We thought that was the end of his journey with us until, sadly, the adopter was forced to return him 4 years later due to personal circumstances. At that point, Patty was nearly 9 years old and back at square one. But little did anyone know, his perfect pet parent wasn't far away. In fact, Genevieve N. was volunteering at the ASPCA at that very moment and looking for the perfect feline friend. Growing up, I always had dogs, a fish, and a couple of snails at one point, and never really considered myself a cat person, says Genevieve, when asked about her decision to adopt a cat. The more I interacted with cats, though, the more I fell in love with them and all the traits that make them so uniquely feline. After volunteering at a cat shelter and a farm sanctuary during her college years, Genevieve knew that she wanted to bring a cat into her life as soon as she could. The moment I moved out, my checklist looked like this: get Wi-Fi, buy a couch, adopt a cat. And so the search for Patty began. As she began looking for the perfect furry friend, Genevieve knew she wanted an older cat. She also had a very clear idea of the type of cat she wanted, personality, looks, and all. So it was as if fate had brought them together when she saw Patty. I had looked at a few cats here and there, but when I saw Patty's picture, I knew he was the one, Genevieve says. When I went to meet him, I knew instantly that we were a match. It was love at first sight and a true happy ending for Patty, who had adjusted wonderfully to his new home. The so-called king of the castle loves eating, greeting Genevieve at the door, and sleeping on any type of paper he can find, whether it be a book or newspaper. He also loves watching cat videos on YouTube and will even paw at the screen. Patty's transformation from a quiet sick stray into a loving and playful companion is truly a happy tale for this four-legged friend. This kind kitty had a lot going against him, but has everything his heart desires now. It always saddens me to think about how, because he's older, FIV positive, and can be shy, how so many people overlooked him, Genevieve says of her choice to adopt Patty. I wish more people took the time to explore adoption options outside of kittens, and that more people knew that cats with FIV can lead happy, healthy lives. Says Genevieve, watching Patty come out of his shell has been one of the greatest joys of my life, and I'm thankful every day that we found each other. And finally, a word from actress and animal lover Betty White about the importance of microchipping your pets. She says, it's a little known fact that 1 in 3 family pets gets lost during its lifetime, and approximately 9 million pets enter shelters each year. That's why it's a wonderful thing to get your pet microchipped and registered with your contact information, because then they can be located and the owners can track where their pets are. And that will do it for this week. I'm your host, Mary DeFranco. I hope you enjoyed the program. Please join me again next time for more pet fun and information. And don't forget, please spay and neuter your pets. It's healthy for them and the environment. Pets Plus Us is a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. I'm your host, Mary DeFranco. If you'd like more information about this program or to hear this program again, visit our website at wxxi.org/reachout. I'd also like to invite you to share your pet story with us by writing to us at reachout@wxxi.org.